Today, I will speak about a theme which has become more relevant for some reason, which people are talking about, people are speaking with me about, people are inquiring about, and which I find to be significant in general. These are themes, because it's not just one, which I discussed long ago in the initial lectures I gave in St. Petersburg, which I have repeated probably before we started broadcasting in public, when this broadcasting was still in its beta stage, when we were testing the broadcasting. I think I spoke about this subject at that time. And I feel that in the modern world, this particular subject is not properly understood. So what I'm speaking about is energetic thought forms, elementals, and the way in which we relate with them. Now, the reason this is a very important topic to revisit is because as we grow spiritually, our capacities increase according to the increase of our awareness. As our awareness expands, we become able to do things, to experience things, and to affect the reality around us in ways which may be new for us. Now, sometimes they say a little knowledge is a bad thing. That means when you know enough about something to be dangerous, but not enough about something to use it safely or even beneficially, this is not a very favorable situation. I am not saying that those who are going through the step-by-step growth that we speak about here on Saturday, that we write about in the forums, that we experience in the meditations, are dangerous. I'm not saying that at all. For the most part, all of you are doing great. I'm really impressed. I'm very encouraged. And I feel that I personally am also growing enormously in your association. And I thank you for that. However, there are some people I'm seeing who are having, shall we call it, unusual experiences. Experiences which they have attempted to define, or experiences which they have attempted to rationalize in a manner which borders on illusion. Now, I hate to use that word, illusion. It is a word which is overused. It is a word which is in itself dangerous, because you can proclaim anything to be illusion and reject it without having to deal with it, because after all, it's an illusion. I feel that the word is appropriate, even though we're in an astrological period where Mercury is retrograde in such a way that it's very hard to properly express yourself, where the meanings of words get lost in this period. And I find it very hard to precisely express myself as I like to do. But still, illusion is a great word when it is used in a particular context. That context is the context of the rope and the snake example, which is given often in the Veda or in the literatures of the Indian tradition. to explain the dangers of understanding illusion improperly. The idea being, for those of you who need a refresher course who never heard this example, if a person sees a rope laying on the ground and becomes afraid because they think it is a snake, or alternatively, if they see a snake on the ground and are not afraid because they think it's a rope, this is an illusion. Now, neither a snake or a rope is illusion. Neither the fear of a snake or the lack of fear of a rope is illusion. All of this is perfectly, quote-unquote, normal, is rational, according to anybody's calculation. Okay, naturally, not all snakes are poisonous, but you don't know unless you're an expert. So a healthy fear of snakes is a good thing. However, when you see a rope and think it's a snake, the particular aspect of that interaction which is illusory is your conclusion that the rope is a snake. The idea is that what is illusion is your perception of the rope being a snake. So this is a small point, really. If you think about ropes and snakes and fear and all of this, these are the big issues. Yet in this particular situation, a little misunderstanding, a misperception, if you will, has caused you to be afraid unnecessarily. And this misperception is the illusion. Consider now how a little thing can have a big effect. And keep in mind this illusion, which can appear when we perceive something when we are not trained in that perception. There are processes of perception. There are processes which, when you go through them, increase your awareness, increase your perception. For example, I have been doing this computer jazz for a long time. Basically, I started in 1966 in my university and have been continuing, not in a professional capacity, but in a heavy user capacity. And just simply because of that, when there is something, a defect or something going on in computers, I just take one look at it and I'm much more aware of what is happening than most people are. Simply because of my experience, because of my training. I just did something for my the company that my sister is the vice president of. All of her, of course, this is blowing my own horn and it's not nice, but all of her experts in the computer and administration and networking department couldn't figure out how to do this one task. And I took one look at it and figured it out, and now they all consider me a great genius, but it is not so. It's just that I have that experience of it. I have that experience that this is how it works. So when somebody who has that experience sees something, it's a different kind of a perception than somebody who doesn't have that experience. A doctor who's an expert at their profession can simply look at a person and get a general impression of where to start researching because they have that perception. A lay person would look and not really understand where to move. They would be bewildered. A mother looks at the child and understands what's going on practically instantly, whereas an outsider can't figure out what's going on with the child and thinks it's mystic power that the mother understands what's going on with the child. And it is mystic power. It's the connection between the mother and the child. Okay, let's get to the point. So we are learning about energy. We are learning about the transferal of energy. We are learning about the reception of energy. We are becoming sensitive to energy. We are feeling energy. We are transmitting energy. Okay, we've done it pretty good. Yet, this is not a simple, it's not a simple kind of a package where you just learn these basics and you are therefore already to be considered an advanced practitioner in the art of energy. Even though I've tried to dive deeply, according to my capacity, into the science of energy, into the science of how it works. And even though I felt sometimes that I've given you a lot of secrets, there is so much more to this. There is such a great depth to this. There's no limit to it. This has to be respected. It has to be respected that there's no limit to this. And according to the energetic groups, I'm using that word loosely, I would call it the assemblance or the assembly of energetic elements. According to how you join a particular energetic flow or circle, you will find there can be an entirely different set of principles at work, that the depth of what you are getting into can be way over your experience. I'm not saying it's deeper when we get involved in connection to our deities, for instance, when we are connecting to Radha and Krishna, when we are connecting to the devas, when we are connecting to those we love. This is as deep or deeper than any other energetic interaction you could possibly have. Therefore, simply in quantity of depth, you are never going to be in another situation where you have to be afraid because it's deeper than what you have capacity to deal with. Yet when we speak about energy, when we speak about the quality of energetic circles, there is a vast difference between this divine energy that we are dealing with and other forms of energy, which have their own depth. Now, one might try to say that non-divine forms of energetic groupings or associations, maybe that's the best word. You see, it's Mercury retrograde. I'm having trouble with the word. But other associations of energy can never be as deep because they are material or not spiritual or not divine. But that would be a mistake to say, because this kind of energy that we're talking about is associated with living beings, with personalities who have the same spirit we do, who have great power in their own particular way, which is energetically manifesting, and therefore not subjected to the same kind of limitation as in this world of physical matter, where quantity and quality are intimately linked in the depth of it. For example, the amount of money you might have in the bank, or your political power, or the quantity of your knowledge, and so on. I'm not saying that on the energetic platform we're dealing with the unlimited. What I am saying is that the limitations are not the same type of limitations that you will find in this physical world. They're less obvious, and they are different according to the kinds of energies that we're dealing with. Now I'll get more specific and give some example here, and then go back out again to the general. We know, we feel, we understand. Some energies are very light, and some energies are dark. Now, to the people who are in the dark energies, the energies don't seem to be, quote unquote, dark. In other words, they don't see it the same way as the people who live in what they call light energies see it. They don't judge it as being dark. We judge it as being dark because the light that we like to be in doesn't penetrate into that. Now, it would be a mistake to call it ignorance in the sense of dullness or in the sense of lack of knowledge. This is a subtle distinction. One has to be very careful when one uses words like ignorance. I know in Vedic understanding, tamaguna would be a good word for it. Rajaguna. You would associate with tama, darkness, raja, redness. Now, I'm using the Sanskrit terminology, even though I know some of the listeners don't understand it, because many times we develop an idea of something according to the label we have given it. Now, if you give tamagun the English label of ignorance, or you give rajaguna the English label of passion, what you really are doing is you are limiting extraordinarily the original concept by pinning it to a specific word in your own vocabulary. This is something which is unavoidable when you're trying to take concepts from foreign languages and place them in your own language. Yet in reality, understanding these concepts is not a product of a mental capacity or an intellectual procedure that would be something academic. In other words, it's not something you just learn by hearing about. It's something that has to be understood on many levels. The color of tamaguna, the feeling of it, the flavor of it. If you think about Bhagavad Gita, where the different modes of material nature. Now, don't forget, these words are, again, translations. A mode. What is a mode? This word has never been used in that particular way before. You might say the characteristic manner in which something operates, or the characteristic qualities of that. These words would be easier to understand. So in the Gita, it speaks about the various characteristics that are associated with these particular terms, like tamaguna, the qualities of tama, the qualities of raja. It is very hard to understand simply in terms of it being an ignorance or a passion. Because in our minds, we take these words in our language and we have our experience of what they mean. But our experience is limited. Our experience may be prejudiced according to social conventions. What was considered ignorance in the 1950s is considered commonplace today. An example, in 1910, that women were voting, would be considered total ignorance. And how is it considered today? So when we speak about these terms, immediately there is a relativity involved, according to time, according to place, according to circumstance. But when the Bhagavad Gita describes tamaguna or rajaguna, it does so in terms of the feeling of it. And the feeling of it is similar in all times and places and circumstances. The smell of it, the taste of it, how it sounds or doesn't sound, how it relates to relationships, how it relates to a type of work or activity. This is therefore a very good description, a complete description of the general mood of a particular quality that you find in the world. So therefore, when we speak about darkness, it really is a meaningless expression. What you really are saying is that it seems to you that this over there is something you just don't like. It's filled with what you call ignorance. It's filled with what you call lack of sensitivity, lack of awareness, Middle Ages mentality, or whatever it is you want to say. Now let's take that and apply it specifically to a particular kind of association of energy that when you become aware, you bump into whether you want to or not. Let me explain that in terms of like when you drive your car. Actually, you'd want to drive on roads where there are no people, especially in Moscow or St. Petersburg at the rush hour. You'd rather there's no people on the road. And you just drive your car from one point A to point B, and there's a parking place for you, and you just put your car there, and you're where you need to be. In reality, it's not like that. You are forced to go in particular ways due to the way the roads are made. While you are on those roads, you feel the bumps and the cracks in the roads. You breathe the exhaust fumes from other cars and trucks. People are cutting you off. You are stuck in traffic jams. You have to experience everyone's frustration. You are forced, whether you want to or not, to share your driving experience with all the other persons on the road. Every now and then you bump into a police who might pull you over for doing something wrong. Every now and then a box may fall off of a truck in front of you and come tumbling at you. Every now and then you'll hit somebody else's car or somebody will hit you. In other words, when you choose to move in that area, that arena, that association of other motorists, you are forced, whether you want to or not, to meet energies you don't like, or sometimes it opens up and you drive like mad and you like it. Similarly, when you deal with energy and you are aware just like you've learned how to drive. You have a driver's license. When you are dealing with energy and you are aware, you are forced sometimes when the road is not clear, the energetic pathways are not clear, to meet things which are not what you would normally choose to meet. And that has the same kind of frustration to it, has the same kind of difficulty to it, as it would in the physical realm. Let's examine that for a second and then get back into how this affects us very powerfully. Sometimes people think that the way we think about the world, the way we feel about this world, this physical world that we live in, is limited to the physical world. But when we move into the world of ethereal matter, the restrictions, the limitations, the difficulties that are faced in the physical realm disappear because different rules work in this area. You don't have the same problems. I feel this is the same exact mistake that people make when they think about the spiritual world. They assume it's just totally the negation of all that they don't like about the material world, and that there everything's fine. I'm not disputing the fineness of it. I am disputing the logic that people use to figure out what that fineness of the spiritual world is, or what that utopia of living in an energetic world might be. Don't forget that even if you were to be entirely situated in your energetic form, your astral form, your psychic energy that's bound to the soul, that's the emanation of the energy of the soul, yet which is of the astral level, energetic level, etheric level, moving within the ether. Because a lot of this energetic expansion that we feel in this physical realm is related to the way in which our spiritual energy diffuses through this physical form, through the physical form, and relates and resonates and reverberates with that which is around us. Yet our minds are always intimately working within this. Our intelligence, our astral capacities and bodies and spirit. It's a very subtle distinction. It's a very subtle thing how our spirit becomes transformed in its energetic expressions when the body is involved and the world of body is involved, or world of physical existence is involved. You also may be in that realm of energy, astrally aware, moving in that plane. Yet you have not detached yourself from your body. You have not detached yourself from that mood of having the experience of your energy resonating with the physical realm. Now, I really hope that has hit your perception there, that you've received this bit of information in the way in which I'm trying to give it, because it's a very powerful piece of information. And I'll just explain that in another way to help you understand the power of it. When you enter into those realms now, you bring with you desires. Think about that. You bring with you conceptions. You bring with yourself definitions, and you bring with yourself your experiences. There's probably a lot more you bring with you, but I want to concentrate on these. In other words, you're taking your consciousness, which includes all that stuff, and placing it in this more subtle realm, this energetic realm. And you are acting on that realm, in that realm, on that platform. Yet it's not that. It is a separate kind of action than you would have done here in the physical realm. It's just in another place. Now, I'm not trying to diminish that experience. I'm not trying to make it common. But what I'm trying to do is give you a healthy sense of respect for what's happening. Because the same kind of pain that can be inflicted upon the subtle body, and I'm using that word again, subtle body, I mean the energetic body, the ethereal existence, the astral energies which flow within that ethereal existence. Therefore, I try to avoid using the term astral. I just say the ethereal because everything rests in it. Huh? The same pain or pleasure, the same kind of experiences that are experienced by that form is potentially to be experienced in that realm of etheric association or ethereal platform where the motion of ethereal energy takes place. The same kind of experience that you have now in this physical realm, the same form of pain or pleasure or curiosity or research or lamentation or disappointment, even depression, is potentially available on these ethereal levels. Because it's the same consciousness. Now you understand what I mean. The consciousness has just moved from centering itself in the physical plane to centering itself on another plane. And just like when you center your consciousness in the physical plane, everything seems to emanate from the physical body, and these esoteric capacities are like satellite capacities. They're like connected to us with like a bubble from this center. I'm painting a picture. I didn't mean it like a Sputnik. But anyway, similarly, when you are centering on that ethereal plane, the body becomes like that bubble connected at a distance. But you haven't lost the connection. It's you've just moved the center from the physical realm to the ethereal realm. It's just that it's shifted. That is a really important point. Just like if you're here in the physical realm, the rules, the experiences, the wisdom, the training, and your personal discipline are there in your mind, are there in your intelligence, are there in your interactions with others. So when you move to that other center, all that stuff is still active. It's still your consciousness. You are still the same person. However, if you do not respect that. It can kind of become like a person on drugs. A person who's into some kind of hallucination, some kind of really wild, sensational form of action, sensational movement, sensational pleasures, sensational horrors, because the boundaries that you have set up in this realm of physical existence, and not that you have set them up with your body, you've set them up with your intelligence, with your consciousness. Understand? These parameters, these boundaries, are not caused by the body alone. The body's a factor. But it's your culture as a person, the way you have cultivated these boundaries of your life, where you won't walk up to somebody and punch them in the nose. You won't steal from somebody. I'm talking about the parameters of your morality, your ethics, what it is that makes you in your particular form. If you move into the ethereal platform and all of a sudden say, yahoo, run here, there, go insane in this way and just, wow, experience like that. And oh my God, there's this and whoo, there's that. You're going to get burned in the same way you get burned doing that in the physical plane. One has to respect this. It's life. That same life is there in the ethereal regions. The same life is there in the celestial regions. In the celestial regions, there are physical forms. However, they have a different form of this physicality. There's really no point in living in this universal realm unless you have the interface of some form of connection to the space within which you live. In the celestial realm, the same kind of consciousness is there, but working within the parameters of that realm. Okay, I think you got the point. I will assume that the point is well received. How does this relate to elementals, to energetic forms? Well, I suppose now the point would be obvious, wouldn't it? Keep it in mind what I just said. I want to go back to forms and the feelings of energy. So we're holding three concepts together in our minds as we listen to this. The concept of consciousness transferring itself from one location to another, not a physical location. The concept of the form of what I am as a living being, energetically, and how I might leave remnants of that. And then the third thing, did I lose you? Remnants, like I haven't discussed that yet. I'm going to. I was just trying to introduce it. That we have our energetic forms, and they are, I don't want to start explaining it now. Sorry, just skip it. And then the third thing is the feeling of the place where we are. We're keeping these three things together. So we understand the consciousness having placed itself somewhere else. Now we're going to move to the energetic body. And now we're going to discuss also the remnants, the leftovers. Shall we call it the snake skins that are left behind of a human being or of a living being? It doesn't even have to be human. Now, just to review, We're talking here about elementals. An elemental is an energetic thought form. Specifically speaking, it is a form created by the melding of an intense emotional experience and our consciousness. It leaves an imprint, a scar within the ether. I'll give you an example. If you are in a flat, let's say, three rooms, and two people are having a vicious argument filled with energy of hatred and anger, even if you are two rooms away, you feel that energy. You feel that pain. It doesn't matter even who you are. There's a very interesting example of Oprah Winfrey, the famous TV personality. Nice lady, does a lot of good work. She once went to the house of some boxer, Mike Tyson, and his wife, who later on it was revealed he was seriously abusing her and harming her. So they asked her to stay overnight, but she wanted to leave because she felt the atmosphere was terrible. But she tried to leave and get a cab, but it was too late at night. She was forced to stay. And the atmosphere was filled with such pain for her. She could not stay. She had to leave the house because of the fighting, because of the abuse, the violence that was taking place. She felt it. It was feeling to her as dark, as evil, as bad, as not good, as something she could not take anymore. So she just had to get out of there. And she's not a psychic person. Everyone feels this. You can even feel it if the persons who were fighting like that leave that place and go somewhere else, because the walls absorb it. The furniture articles absorb it. The air absorbs these energies. And when you walk into such a place, you feel it. Also, think about, like, if I don't know if you've ever had the horrifying experience of having to go into a butcher shop or into a slaughterhouse of some kind. You feel that pain of the animals. It's in the atmosphere. You can't avoid it. Because of the intense emotion experienced by these beings in a physical time, place, and circumstance, an energetic imprint is left upon that place. That is an elemental. It may be also an imprint of energy just absorbed in matter. But I'm talking about that elemental, which is a form of fear. You can even just, I don't do this, but you could very easily connect to the pain of an animal in a slaughterhouse, because those elementals are so powerful, so strong, that they are just emanating out the whole area around. I'm sure this whole globe is being affected by it. Similarly, there are elementals of love, where intense experiences of love took place. That's why people have holy places, where people have places of miracles, because of the intense experiences of love there. Anytime a powerful thought connected with an emotional energy converge upon a person, this creates an energetic thought form or an elemental. If I'm really angry at you and I'm thinking about you And I'm sending to you, consciously or unconsciously, this energy of my anger with thought. I'm sending over an elemental to you, which is my communication to you, that I don't like it. I'm angry at you. And here, eat this elemental, you lousy... Similarly, I can send over an elemental of love to somebody. This is the way in which people experience other people over long distances, consciously or unconsciously. Now that we've already talked about, but I'm going to twist this a little bit and show you where it gets complex. Let's say you send over an elemental of love, and or let's say you are just concentrating. Now, instead of concentrating on the dying animals in the slaughterhouse, which is such a horrifying energy, you're concentrating on a person you want to have some connection to. People fantasize like this all the time with movie stars or rock stars or people that they really want to get together with. So they visualize this. So in other words, their energy is moving out towards that person. Sometimes they may connect with that person. Sometimes they may connect with an elemental from that person. Let's say, I'll give you the example. You think you want to connect with somebody in love. So you pick your most desired movie star. So you reach out in visualization to that movie star, and all of a sudden you feel, boom, you connected. And you're feeling that intense energy of their sensuality, which is, after all, what you're attracted to. And their sensuality just sends shivers up your spine, and you're just like, drooling in the sensuality of the whole exchange. And you may even think you're totally convinced you just connected to them. But if you were to write them a letter and say, hello there, fabulously beautiful movie star, this is your secret ethereal lover, and I'm just saying that was great last night, and they may just look at that and just chuck it and saying, what is this idiot talking about? You've met them, sure, but you've met a remnant. You've met a snapshot, a composite snapshot of their mood at a particular time, or a particular slice of their own energetic experiences, their own energetic sensuality. I have found you can even connect to a speaker's mind or a speaker's kind of elemental and share things. That's the way channeling is done. Somebody who speaks, somebody who talks about or lectures or whatever. You can connect to some musical personality's slice of their creativity. You can connect to anything, anywhere. You just have to have that feeling to do it. It doesn't mean you're connecting, if they're no longer living, or even if they are living, it doesn't mean you're connecting to their living, vibrant, conscious experience, and you're sharing that with them in the here and the now. You can be experienced, for example, a sensuality they may have as part of their nature. It's just something which is there as part of their nature, or their intelligence as part of their nature. It's just the generic quality of them. Or you may connect to a slice of an experience they had that is left as a remnant, that is left as an elemental, that energetic snapshot of thought connected with emotional power, energetic power. It's a thought form, an energetic thought form. That makes things very complex. Therefore, illusion becomes an important factor to consider. You may think you're connecting to the person. You are, but not really. The illusion is you think you have a relationship. The reality is that you are just experiencing something connected with the person. Okay, the quality of a person and the person themselves are not different. But then don't take the illusory step of thinking you have a relationship. You are basically exploiting. You are feeding off of another person's energy field. Let's repeat that. You're feeding off of another person's energetic expansion, another person's energetic creations. What does that make you? Well, I don't really want to say it, but it's somewhat similar to I even hate to use this word, so I won't. Like a leech. You know, these little black creatures, they leech off of another person. So people can have these energetic leeches on them, which are feeding off of them. And the leeches continue as long as they get what they're looking for. Now let's move back to consciousness for a second. Would you do such a thing physically in this realm of physicality when you and your consciousness are centered in the physical world with your boundaries? Maybe you would. Maybe it's your nature to do so. Maybe it's something that you do in your life. Maybe you're even, God forbid, an energy vampire. An energy vampire. You are sucking the energy from others to give yourself life. Often, those who do such kinds of things are sucking out of those who have what they want. And therefore, I say, if your boundaries are set, if you are a healthy person, you don't act as an energy vampire in this physically centered realm. And when you move into the ethereal centered realm, you also don't act as an energy vampire. But when people who are not aware of the extremely uncomfortable act of being an energy vampire, when they move into the ethereal realm because they learned how, they take with themselves the exact same mentality and they act in the same way there. Except now, they can be an energy vampire not only with those who are standing in their physical realm, but they have this enormous reservoir of personalities and energy all over the world or beyond that they can suck the energy from. Wild, isn't it? Now let's go back to feeling, that third bubble. The feeling, like tamagun, what is the feeling of that? Rajagun, what is the feeling of that? Now, rajaguna, for instance, in and of itself, will include that sensuality, and that's not necessarily bad. It's the act of creation, it's the act of inspiration, it's the act in which, it's the energy in which basically the joy of life manifests. It's the sattva-gun where it maintains. So therefore, the raja-sattva creates this entire universe. But when you slip into the tama aspect of it, as a vampire would, destroying, depleting from others. Or, shall we say, creating difficulties for others, selfishly utilizing others. The feeling of the sensuality becomes exploitative. So one has to consider all of these things as a package. One has to understand this as a package. Contemplate this. And then look in the mirror and decide, is this what I want to be? Again, there's nothing wrong with your particular sensuality or your particular way of living your life to the fullest. But when you become exploitative of others, when you become a vampire with others, when it gets out of control and you lose your that which makes that goodness in you as a person, you become captured in associations of energy which are dark, because the feeling of that is this darkness. And that's the danger of not having enough awareness. Of a little bit of knowledge is more dangerous than none at all. Because if you're going to move into that arena, you have to have that awareness of the feeling of what you are entering into. So I am presenting this without a judgment. After all, if you are in such an arena of ethereal activity, if your awareness is expanded, and you do end up in these strange movements, like a roller coaster, up and down. You know a roller coaster? In the amusement park, this thing on the wheels that goes. So let's say you're in this roller coaster and you're going in and out of the depths of the energy that you are experiencing. It would be inconsiderate of me to say it's wrong, because it's your experience that you need to go through to find yourself, to define yourself according to the what makes you feel right about yourself. The only problem is periodically you will get burned and you won't like that. And how do you get burned? You may start being invasive into the life of people who don't want you there and who object. And if you are unlucky enough, who have the power to push it right back in your face. Or who may just block you out entirely. Or who may just put you in an energy cocoon so that you can just burn yourself up in it. In other words, it's not that there are no consequences. The same exact format of consequences that are there in this physically centered realm are there in the etherically centered realm. The same principles are there. And if you play with fire, you will get burned. Don't forget, there are some personalities in these realms who don't at all mind playing with you. They consider you like a child. You come dancing before them and do your thing. And so they share with you your thing for a while until you become nasty. Then they send you home to mother because they have no responsibility to you. They have no responsibility to accept anything from you. They are simply accepting from you what they want, as long as they want it, for whatever reasons they have. I even wrote in the forum just recently about the phenomena of you calling out to somebody's energies and something responds to you that seems to be exactly what you're looking for. It reciprocates with you and gives you great pleasure. You ask what it is, you feel what it is, and that energy just says, yes, I'm exactly who you want me to be. Who do you want me to be? Or even smarter, they will say, who do you think it is? Just consider, if you're going to be a sneaky ethereal entity, how would you do it? Well, you'd do it just like this. Your subject is saying, boy, I want to essentially connect with that one over there, exactly who I'm looking for. So this ethereally aware being says, hey, some fun possible, because everyone's looking for fun. So that being comes and says, I'm here. And you go, oh my goodness. And you go, who are you? And that being goes, who do you think? And you go, no. Could it be? And that being goes, yes, why not? Do you think it's impossible? Do you think you're not attractive? And you go, oh, it's you. And the being goes, yes, it's me. I am here for you now. Finally, our true relationship can establish. And you go berserk. Ah! And you have fun. And that being has fun. One day, you try in another way to verify. Am I doing this? Is this really happening? So when you do that, you come to the real personality. And the real personality is scratching his or her head and saying, huh? What are you talking about? At this point, you're devastated. You don't know whether they're lying to protect themselves. You don't know whether you are a total fool. You don't know whether you're crazy or not, or whether you have been cheated. You have no idea. And unless you are a very honest and person who's very concerned about truthfulness and reality, you would not have the power to come out and say, oh my God, I had this experience, what was going on? Because it's embarrassing. It is absolutely embarrassing. Now, on the ethereal platform, it shouldn't be embarrassing. If you are dealing with somebody who's aware, they see your energy coming, and they understand it immediately. There are no secrets amongst those who are aware, at least not energetically. Perhaps identification with a particular designation may not be clear. In other words, you can feel very clearly other persons. You feel them and you know them from that feeling, to whatever degree that feeling has been able to focus. But to know who they are is more than just knowing their name, knowing where they live. Who they are is a big thing. So on this platform, life can be very confusing. Therefore, I recommend that the same boundaries you respect in this physical world, you should respect in the ethereal. It will be safer for you. It will, to a large extent, prevent you from being burned. It will prevent you annoying the wrong people. And those people you should worry about annoying are not those people who make a display of their power. What I just said was that on that level, the most powerful persons don't have to show it in any way. They may be completely neutral. They may never express their power, at least not to you, at least not when under normal circumstances. But if and when you become a serious annoyance, you will find out about their enormous power and get burned. Therefore, you have to be careful. It's not like, for example, you go up to the chief of police's front door in your city and you bang on the door and say, "Let me in." So if energetically you're banging on somebody's door because of some illusion, we've already discussed that, you're playing with fire. Now, please don't misunderstand why I'm saying this. I'm not trying to play like the parent who's trying to protect their children. I know everyone makes mistakes. I know you learn from those mistakes. I learn from my mistakes. I know that we grow together. Yet, I have explained all of these other aspects very clearly, how you can use this awareness, how you can use your power. And I feel that to make a complete picture, I have to emphasize this, especially now, so that you don't get burned. Because if you get burned by doing something which may have some relation to something I have said, I'm not going to feel good about me. I'm not going to sleep peacefully at night. My subconscious is going to bring up all this guilt. You're going to ruin my good night's sleep. I'm going to feel that, oh my God, I gave a book of matches to a child. How stupid am I? I gave matches, you know, that lights fire, to a child. That makes me unlimitedly stupid. And I don't like being stupid. So therefore, I'm explaining this. And I'm sorry if I haven't explained it enough or I haven't done it properly before, but I feel it's important. And so I've taken this chance of perhaps stepping on a toe here or there, I don't know, to explain this very honestly and frankly. So I will stop there. I suppose there is more that could be discussed, but I think because of the nature of this discussion, I'm going to take questions today. So if only related to this discussion, you wish to ask questions, please do. Because I really want this to be clear. I really want to make sure that you are satisfied with what I am speaking about today. And believe me, we all share the responsibility of how we act. And also, I received a very nice phone call from Garuda. I'll show you the book. He has written many books. This is his last book. It is a very fabulous translation of the Bhagavad Gita. What it is that he has taken the original Sanskrit and put it in the original English so to speak. It's almost as if the original book was spoken in English, if you could say so. We were discussing the difficulties of translation because the two of us do the exact same kind of work. I am taking concepts and translating the concepts from their conceptual existence, placing them into the English language in a way which is not disturbed by or confused by conceptions that we have of language. For example, I gave passion and ignorance as words which have a specific form of feeling about them from our common usage of these terms. Whereas if you were to speak about Rajagun, Tamagun, it is these particular qualities are defined by the feeling of them, the various ways in which these characteristics manifest. So, for example, one of the things I have just done in this lecture today was to translate the movement of the center of consciousness from the physical realm into the ethereal realm. I did this translation so that everyone would see the difficulties that appear there. And the reason I did this, as I said in the beginning of the lecture, was because I have been receiving communications from multiple sources, not just one, multiple sources, of persons who are feeling affected by disturbances on that level. And I wanted to explain to them the possible causes of this disturbance by clarifying the translation when you move from the physical plane to the ethereal plane. There are other significant energies involved in all of this. Obviously, spirit is the most significant of all energies. And part of the difficulty of translation is understanding what we talk about when we say spirit. Now, I have been asked in St. Petersburg to talk about this. I have a whole list of questions here, and they're all based again. And if you remember some of the previous lectures that have been given, you will remember that we've had this series of questions probably from the same place, maybe from the same source, where they are questioning my usage of the quote signs. Now, when you put quotes around something, it means to me, and I hope it means to you, that I am not accepting the label of this word in the way that you, who have asked the question, or perhaps some persons who have asked or have some conceptions, think the term is defined. Especially, I do not accept, or rather, I would not discuss a dichotomy. I mean to say a polemic, a contrast, a 180-degree contrast between spiritual and material. I dislike that. I personally do not wish to speak about it. I do not think it is valuable. I do not think it gives any information that we would learn from, that we would evolve with. It doesn't increase our power. That kind of a discussion between spiritual and material, this dichotomy thing, is the basis of diminishing our power. Not because of the concepts themselves, but because of the way these concepts are used by people who somehow feel that when you are pushed down or repressed, that is somehow beneficial for either you or them. Therefore, I don't like to use these terms. After all, as soon as spiritual, we can say it's a great word to throw around. Spirit, spiritual. But when people start to actually define what these words mean, they do it basically by contrasting spirit with matter. And then we start defining matter. What is matter? Well, we can talk in terms of earth and water and fire and air and ether, of mind, intelligence, and false ego. We can talk in terms of qualities and characteristics. And this becomes matter. But I have the problem that none of that has any meaning whatsoever, even in this world of physicality, without the spirit making it valuable. In other words, it is the spirit which is the life of all of it. So any particular decision, choice, desire, action is fueled by spirit. The problem is when you are not aware of that, you allow the physicality to move you. And then, in that case, it's like what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the only thing acting are these qualities. Because these qualities have become the motivating force of action. This is when you are in ignorance. When you are aware, you understand these qualities become the arena that you live in, but ultimately it is yourself who is the energy of the life that you live, that ultimately you are the one responsible for that which you do, that which you initiate, that which you understand. So when I speak about spiritual, I do not speak about it in terms of negating or contrasting material. I speak about it in terms of that which pervades everything, from the mood of sarvam kalvidam brahma, all things are that spirit. From the mood of a Ramanuja point of explanation, that there is oneness in all things. There is that spiritual unity of all things. And from that point of view, all variety will manifest. It is a different way of looking at it. And therefore, I do not like having to be placed in a position of having to continuously cater to a misconception. You may not think it's a misconception, and it really may not be a misconception. It may just be the way you see things. But I don't see them like that. And if you understand the point of view from which I speak, you will understand more completely what I'm talking about. We've had this problem before. We have this problem often. That if you have the conception, there is matter, that then there is spirit that enters into matter, is covered by matter, and has to break itself free to express, you will not understand anything I say according to the way I feel I am presenting it to you. Everything I say will remain a mystery. You will be confused. You will find contradictions. Of course, when I talk about personal relationships, I talk about emotions, I talk about simple kind of things which are not absorbed in complexity, which are not actually the real power of what I am or what you are, you won't have a problem with that. That will just make sense to you because it will fit within both ways of thinking. But when I start talking about awareness, when I start talking about ethic or morality or the consciousness that causes us to choose what is or what isn't, or even I use the word sensuality, if you have another conception about spirit, about how spirit interacts and integrates in this entire existence, you will 100% misunderstand what I'm talking about, and you will not get the point. If you are one of these persons who insists on having this dichotomy between matter and spirit as the basis of your spiritual understanding, and if one day you suddenly understand what I'm talking about, and you go, aha, I recommend you go back and listen to many of the lectures over again, because when you do so, you will hear everything from a totally different point of view. You will understand yourself. You will understand what I've been speaking about from a completely different point of view. You will understand when I talk about spiritual alchemy, what I'm talking about. You will understand how discovering spirit in all things is spiritual alchemy. It's turning matter into spirit. And really all it is understanding the spiritual nature of that so-called matter. It's the translation of the physical world into the manifestation of spirit, which all it is anyway. It's the emanation from God, if you will. It's the creation of God, if you will. It is spiritual, if you will, because that's all there is. There is only reality. The only thing differentiating it is this illusion that we have of what it really is. And I don't wish to break down that illusion by contrasting illusion with reality, because that's admitting in reality that your illusion is real. Again, we have the rope and the snake. That you misunderstand this world to be material is your particular problem. It's your particular illusion. That is not real for me. I don't think like that. So I don't want to give your illusion credence as being an absolute principle of existence. It's your idea. Maybe some religions agree with you. But if you've been listening carefully to what I've been speaking about, you will notice I don't agree with religions. I have been speaking about things which cut at the very basis of religions. I cut at the very basis of all that people base their spiritual lives on. I'm trying to translate spirit into reality. And therefore, this defining is very complex. Very complex. And therefore, when I put things in quotes, it's because I'm not talking about your definition. I'm talking about my definition. And when I'm talking about my definition and I use such a word, I put it in quotes. If I'm talking about your definition, I don't put it in quotes. Now, of course, that person who wrote the question is upset with me because I misunderstood his question. I understand that. It is very, very hard to translate concepts into words that everybody will understand equally. Now let's talk about the idea of differences between energies and people. In other words, if I'm fully spiritual, is my energy qualitatively in some way different than the energy of somebody who is not fully spiritual? Or if my spiritual energy is just flowing and I'm accomplishing things or doing things and I'm totally in connection with the universe, am I actually spiritual? The problem to answer such a question is, you've got to accept there's a dichotomy between spirit and matter. That's the only way, using words, you could deal with such a question. And I don't want to do that, because it wouldn't really help anyone to answer in that way. But what I could say is that when you are aware of your spirit, of what is, then when you are working, when you are acting, anywhere you may be, in any realm you may do it, you are acting with knowledge. You are acting with realization. You are acting in an experience which is an expression of what you are as a person, even if it is relating to physical objects or physically resident people. Now, if you want me to start making a contrast between a spiritual person and a material person, I would have a very hard time to do that from that point of view, or using those words. I would rather speak about the one who is aware and the one who is not yet aware. There is an enormous difference between them, not in their spiritual quality, because both are fueled by spirit, but rather in their consciousness. That one's consciousness is aware of the spiritual energy of all things, including the person who's unaware, who has, for various reasons of their own, chosen to live in that feeling of ignorance. That is as much a spiritual decision and choice as the one who wishes to live within the feeling of awareness. I'll admit to you quite openly, sometimes I'm just like meditating way out there, really in the world, and in the spiritual realm and energy, and just floating around. And after a while, I just get so tired, I just want to merge in front of a TV movie. How horrible. I just do it. Wake up the next morning and chug on with my life. Now, if somebody were to see that and say, that is illusion, or is it actually better to just be totally spaced out in your head and still struggle to do something? Still struggle to do something spiritual? Is that more spiritual? To fight with yourself like that? It's a controversial point. I'm not going to answer it. But I make the decision sometimes just to merge. You know, many times I love to be with people. I'm a people person. I love to be around people and talk and act. But after a while, I just get tired. So I retreat into my room. I slam the door shut and lock it. Then there's me in here, and there's all of you out there. And I become peaceful. As much as I love everybody, sometimes I need a break. So when you live within this world of physicality, You've got to balance. You've got to balance. Balancing is very important. And it is a spiritual awareness how this balancing is best done. So therefore, I know I have not answered the question sent to me from St. Petersburg properly. I know I have not respected the question properly. But I just really had to bring up this point. So please forgive me over there. Now, I got another question. On one hand, it seems to be a very interesting question. And on the other hand, it's actually an obvious thing. Sometimes we feel that people have done wrong to us. So then, how do you react as a person when someone has done something wrong to you? Answering this question is entirely a product of your evolutionary state of your consciousness. The choice you make at that specific moment depends entirely on who you are. And there are a lot of different ways you would be justified in acting, regardless of your level of evolution. Nobody would say if somebody's attacking you or pushing you over or stealing, that if it were safe and appropriate to do so, counterattacking would be bad. It would not. Nobody could criticize you, because it's one of those situations which demands an action. Yet you could also say, I'll do nothing. You could also say, I'll turn the other cheek. It depends on how you wish to respond at a particular moment. Now, some person may say, I want to take revenge. I'm going to teach them a lesson. Now, when you get into this kind of a thing, even in this physical realm or whatever, you start to bend the envelope of acceptability. You start to get into situations which could be, you know, seriously warped. I mean, it could create a lot of difficulty for yourself because, you know, it's really a dangerous realm you're in, because sometimes when you dedicate your life to getting revenge or whatever, it can work against you and cause you more trouble. What to speak of karma, this consequences. It's not that just because you're in an ethereal realm, there are no consequences. Sometimes people, silly people say, there's no karma there. That's absurd from the point of view of, number one, you don't know what karma means when you say that. And number two, to think there are no consequences for your actions means there is no point in acting. Understand? There's no point in anything. If there was not a consequence, if there was not an effect of something done, then no one would do anything. There would be no movement, no motion, no thought, no speech, no act. No transmission, no reception, because there is no result. Everything would be nullified. So to say there are no consequences in that realm is absurd. It's a simplistic, childish misunderstanding of words. The proper understanding is there are certainly consequences. So if you therefore wish to take things into your own hands and get justice or get revenge, even not revenge, just justice, because there should be things right and you want to make them right, there are consequences. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying the consequences are equal to the same format of consequences there would be in this physical realm. You may think that if somebody stole from you and you go down the street with a gun and you get back what you stole, that's justice. But you would get in trouble because that's not justice. Justice in this kind of an action is dealt by the police and by the court system. So you would have consequences. You would suffer. And therefore you don't do it. Similarly, that same exact kind of a thing, obviously different in the way it manifests, but you have to consider in the exact same responsible manner the results of your actions on any platform. Okay, you may not call it karma. I don't care. It's a consequence, and you have to respect that. And therefore, when there are such consequences, since you initiated the situation which got you in those consequences, you got to live with them. Sometimes people ask me, how am I in this situation where I'm constantly blocked? I can't get anything together. I can't seem to overcome these powers which keep me repressed or pushed down, or I can never do anything. I can't change it. Well, look at that from the point of view of consequences. Perhaps, I'm not saying it so, but perhaps you were in previous times creating some kind of an action where you had to be in this consequence, where you were forcibly placed within this kind of a situation where you're stuck. It's the consequence that you deserve, that you created. And if you start to react against that consequence instead of accepting it and living with it, thinking that it's justice you do so, you've got it just backwards, because the justice is what's being done to you. So you can't, let's say the prisoners in the jail, for example, don't have a right when they get out of jail to come back into the jail and kill the guards to create justice for all of the bad things the guards did to them. Because their being in jail in the first place is their own punishment and consequence. They don't have a right to react against the suffering they had to go through while they were being punished. It's very simple. But if you try to do that anyway, you are initiating a new consequence which will cause you suffering again. So therefore, to use the word justice is dangerous, because you don't know how that is working, that justice is working. It's a very complex situation. So watch it. Be careful. I try to explain. Oh, that person says I explained it. Good. Then I got a question here that we have. This is not really a question. Rather, I would say this is a comment, which I think is a very good comment, and I'll rephrase it from computer translation from Russian to English into real English, or my version of it anyway. Nothing's real. We as conscious beings have the capacity to feel, and you can call it the way we're wired, the way our energy is wired, the way our energy responds and reacts and can feel, you know, like a cat's whiskers, very sensitive to the slightest movement. Our energy has that capacity to feel and to therefore distinguish an honest presentation, an honest dialogue, from one which is dishonest. To distinguish between that which feels light and that which feels dark. And that this can be studied in the exact same way as we study facial expressions, between those who we communicate with in personal contact. That when we speak, we see the faces of others. We feel their reactions. This gives us an understanding of what's happening. So that same thing is there on the ethereal level. We can study it, study its quality, study how it responds to certain challenges we make. That's why some people say, if an energy comes to you, you can challenge it that, are you in the light? Are you in the service of Krishna or the service of God? And you will immediately understand the response. I think that's very simplistic, personally. I think a lot of people have been cheated by that simplistic kind of a thing. But you get the idea. The idea being that you have to investigate. You have to perceive. You have to analyze what's actually going on and decide accordingly. It's an art, just like an art of seeing the facial expressions of others. And don't forget that I've just given that comment. That was a very good comment. But I would like to bring out another point. Some people like the feeling of the dark. They don't therefore have a negative expression of it. They can speak about the darkness and the beauty of it in the same way that you could speak about the light and the beauty of it. The difference is there only when they see the light, they go, ah, it's too bright for me. When you feel the darkness, you go, oh, I don't like that. It's a very important thing to understand. You can even be friends with a person who feels the dark, but you might not like when the friend starts creating or expressing that dark energy because you don't like dark energy. I have a friend like that, an incredibly talented personality who is often very dark. And I think this friend is great. But when this friend starts creating such darkness, I kind of step aside from that. Now, somebody might say that's, well, insane. How can you like such a person and dislike when they create the situation? Why don't you just avoid them in the first place? And I say, I can't avoid them in the first place because they're so incredibly interesting. This is a very interesting, talented person. I love this person. It's just that I don't like the dark of that creation. I know that sounds very strange. But if you think about people as spirit, as the spirit is everything, the spirit is manifesting everywhere, that all things are spirit, it makes more sense. And if you understand that somebody might like to eat, you know, a certain kind of flavor that you can't stand, you don't have to eat it. You understand? And that if the other person eats that flavor, it doesn't really affect you. It depends. And if it does affect you, you have a right to step aside. I know that sounds very strange to a lot of people. I have experience that it works. And I feel my life is so much richer because of it. That doesn't mean I embrace the darkness. It doesn't mean that I surround myself with darkness to expand the fun in my life. Not at all. But every now and then, it's kind of cool to have people around you who are very different, who have a really cool way of seeing things that just really inspires you to this incredible variety of this world. To make your mentality so thin and narrow that you will only see something like this because it scares you to be anywhere else is a very narrow understanding. Do you know actually that I know also other people who regularly go to restaurants so that they become exposed to the bacteria in these places, which are not as clean as their home. Do you know how insane that sounds, but how incredibly intelligent that is? Because if you're living in this super clean environment at home and you've got everything just perfectly antiseptic, and you walk out the door into the world of bacteria, it just takes one of them to go whoop, and there you are with a fever. And if you regularly expose yourself to a variety of things, your immune system becomes stronger, and you're not killed by a little this or a little that. It's a wild concept, but one that works very well for a lot of people. At least for me, it works. That doesn't mean that you embrace bacteria and you say, wow, it's so cool, I'm going to bring these bacteria home. I'm going to cultivate them in Petri dishes in my sink. I'm going to cultivate bacteria. I like this black energy. I'm going to bring it home and cultivate some black. Understand my point? And think about it. This fear of things is worse than the thing itself. This, it's Maya. It's illusion. Oh my God, it's a bacteria. It's dirt. It's filth. I remember a situation where somebody was injured and there was a lot of blood and everybody was, oh my God, how horrible. And some person just ran right into the middle of that horror and started patching and holding together and compressing, and where everybody else was just in horror and couldn't move because they didn't want to get dirty. Some people live in their spiritual ivory towers. Do you know that there are saintly persons in India who, ivory tower, do you know what an ivory tower is? It means just this. I know one head of the Madhvacharya Sampradaya who takes a bath in the river, and they hand him his Brahmin underwear on a stick, because nobody can touch his Brahmin underwear. He washes it in the river, they use a stick, they put it up on a tree, and then when he gets dressed, they use a stick and hand it back to him. Because no contamination can come to him. He will only speak to the purest of people. There are many like that who live in this bubble of purity. And if any of the impurity from the outside comes to them, they freak out. It makes reverberation in their brain. I don't think that's very strong. I don't think that's very useful. Because we live in this world and there's a lot of stuff going on. And we got to deal with it. You can deal with it by running away from it, or you can deal with it right here on the ground, where we all experience. Anyway, that's just a comment. Then there's another question here. How do you stop these unwanted connections to defend yourself from energies you don't want to get involved with? I've tried to ask them to stop, but it didn't help. Okay, let's answer this question like this. Let's say some thief is taking away your wallet. And you say, please, my dear thief, don't take my wallet. Thank you. Ultimately, this is what you're saying. Some energy is coming to you. You may even feel raped by that energy, pillaged by that energy. And you say, oh, please, just don't do that. I don't like it. That's not very valuable. I have experienced that these unwanted connections never are associated with politeness. And that you can ask, of course, please leave me alone. But I don't know, very rarely are you dealing with somebody or something that would respond to such a request or even be able to hear it. Normally, you're dealing with a energy which is coming simply because of desire, or it's like a child with power who has no idea how to control it. So how do you deal with it? You deal with it by using appropriate counter power. If you have heard and learned and associated with us in our various discussions throughout these years now, actually we're in the third year of these. No, this is actually, let's see, 2004, 2005, 2005, 2006. This is starting the fourth year of these public broadcasts. And there must be some understanding of how you can use your energy. And when there is this unwanted thing that doesn't stop when you ask it to, you create a wall and just push it away. Package it up. Now, how do you do that? Visualization. You center yourself in a powerful place. I always go in my temple room if I'm home, because there, basically, I'm really invincible. It's my place of power. At least I have to feel like that, because if you feel that, oh, I can be killed at any moment, then you will be. But if you go into your place of power, and you are taking upon yourself power, and you just take that power, center yourself, and then you visualize a brick wall, and then you just push it at that energy and push it away and keep pushing until it's far away. And then just let that wall keep moving as you keep buffeting it with energy without touching it, letting it just keep going more and more and more. And then just with your hands go, stay there. Stay. And just become quiet and just listen and feel. Is your energy still there or not? That's obviously a very effective means to push away unwanted energies. And if that energy is too hot, put it in an ice cube behind the wall. You've got this power. It's the same kind of power you send when you deal with love, except now you're doing it as a self-defense. Sometimes people don't need so much power put against them. Sometimes it can be gentler, just push away, and they get the point. But it takes experience. This is not something you can just pick up like that. But you can try it. Just try it and see what happens. The idea is that sometimes people may respond to being pushed away without having to throw brick walls at them. You can just push them away and they get the point. Okay, so sometimes you don't need a brick wall. You can just push them away with your hands or something, or just some. Okay. You can be more gentle about it and they get the point. And that takes experience to understand how much power you have to use. Now, again, you better be careful with who you're dealing with and what you're dealing with. I mean, but you can always push away. That's a good self-defense. Don't try to do more than that unless you really know what you're doing, unless you have that feeling. Otherwise, you could have, you know, a battle going on. Now, the same person who talked before about this, who made this comment that I spoke about, has brought up another point. But this time, I'm going to disagree with it. She says that in every living energy center, nervous center, consciousness center, has like a transmitter. And that transmitter is something that works on the inner realm of the beings, the etheric footprint, the etheric fingerprint, the etheric characteristic of that energy. Now, this person who's speaking this says, always, always, and that word always I disagree with. It is possible, as if you were an instant messenger, which we are communicating on here, to know from whom the message has come, because the name of everybody is there at the top. But it's not like that in all cases. It's like that in a lot of the cases. And certainly the quality of the personality and the quality of the energy will give you a fingerprint of where the energy came from. But. If you remember, we talked about these elementals created just because of our expression of intense thought, or created as slices of our qualities expressed at a particular time. If we were to connect with such elementals or such slices of snapshot quality of a person, we might get the understanding of who is the source of that, but we won't get that it is a message sent to us. In Messenger, when somebody sends me a message, I get it because it's coming to me. And therefore, knowing who it's from is very significant. But if I'm reaching out and connecting to some elemental or some separated energy from the person, I may know who it is, but that doesn't mean it's a message sent to me. And therefore, it will have a different quality. And that's an incredibly important thing to understand. I'm sure it's obvious why. Okay, I got a comment. Somebody made an experience, has an experience that Krishna said to her, be indifferent to pleasure, be indifferent and ignore it. And this energy, and ask the energy, just leave you alone. And it helped very much. It was just a push away. It wasn't big work. And that's true. That's the way it works, you know. A lot of the time, you just have to state what you want. And stating just doesn't mean words. It means in consciousness, in determination of consciousness. It's like if somebody's giving you ice cream, and you say, no, I don't want this ice cream. It's making me fat and it's making me sick. Yet at the same time, you keep eating it and you're going, oh God, that's good. I can't stop. Well, whose fault is that? I mean, honestly, whose fault is that? You can say all you want, don't give me more, I don't want it. But as long as you are eating, you are making a statement. So one has to be aware of that.